Hello and welcome back to Stoner. We have a very, very exciting show for you today. I talked to Charlie Wartzel, who is a technology reporter, but he's been at Alex Jones's trial. If you don't know who Alex Jones is, he's probably the most famous conspiracy theorist in America. So I've been following Charlie's tweets, which have been very funny and often tragic, from this custody trial that Alex Jones is enmeshed in. And smack in the middle of the trial, a huge weed bomb drops. Basically, Alex Jones's ex-wife's attorney says, "Here is Alex Jones on Joe Rogan's podcast smoking weed on air." And Alex Jones says,
"He smokes weed irregularly, but almost annually, in order to test its strength." He says that that's what law enforcement does. He says he tests it because George Soros has engineered the weed to be too strong in order to control the minds of.
And it pretty much continues in that vein. I knew I had to get Charlie on the show to tell us if the weed really is too strong and if George Soros is to blame. So here he is. So you are just back from Austin.
Yes.
Charlie.
Yes.
Welcome to the show, Charlie.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Before we get there, there will be a reason why this story is going on a podcast called Stoner. But it's going to, like many things about this story, it's a long and convoluted road there.
Yes.
So who is Alex Jones?
So Alex Jones is sort of fondly known as America's, like, most popular conspiracy theorist.
Mm-hmm.
He's the best known conspiracy theorist, I would say. And he's a born in Dallas, moved to Austin. He's a tried and true Texan who started out on Austin's public access station, just sort of one dude behind a desk in a dark room talking about whatever he wanted to talk about. And
right.
That happened to be, you know, the really sort of basic conspiracy theories of, like, government surveillance. And there's this cabal of globalist elites controlling the world. And that morphed into a radio gig, which morphed into him creating his own sort of website very early on, building that out. And now he runs this kind of, like, maverick media empire. And, you know, it looks like CNN right now, but for, like, 9/11 truthers.
He was part of what was an existing conspiracy establishment. And then he started kind of riffing and going off on his own with it. And he built it into something now that is competitive with the biggest of the conservative radio.
Yeah, it's an empire.
It's an empire.
Right.
But it's also totally unhinged. It's wildly theatrical in the sense of a wrestling kind of spectacle. It involves, like, shirts getting ripped off. And if you were to describe the platonic ideal of conspiracy radio right now, it's Alex Jones.
It absolutely is. And you're right that it's sort of like, it takes the best of, like, conservative AM talk radio, like venting theater, plus, like, the theater of just, like, he has this huge round, expressive face and this, like, gravelly voice. And it's just, he's a brilliant broadcaster and entertainer. There's no one like him.
So part of the reason why I wanted to talk to you about this on the show is because I think that Alex Jones springs from some of the same source material as psychedelic counterculture. You know, he's a person who was really part of Weird Austin to begin with.
Yeah.
And that's a public access culture. It's less political than it is, like, fringe in every way.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like that, like, his roots are there. And then in the last few years, he's really exploded into the alt-right kind of territory.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, someone I spoke to in Austin from the early days told me that, like, he couldn't have come from anywhere really other than Austin, because you sort of have that, like, proud liberty Texan roots, you know, like,
yeah,
you can't take my guns, you can't take my land, fused with this total strangeness. And like Austin was just this home in the 90s to, like, cheap housing and like this estuary of creative people.
And dating back also to the sort of, like, outlaw country period in Austin. Like,
yeah. 'Cause
wasn't Alex Jones, like, friends with Willie Nelson at one point?
Yes, there are. I mean, he's sort of, like anyone in Austin, it's such a small, big town that like anyone who's a big personality will inevitably find themselves in a room with that other big personality. So it's hard to know how much, but I think back when he was a little less fringy, you know, Willie Nelson's like, yeah, you know, like, yeah.
I really like some of what he's got to say.
Yeah, some of the Liberty stuff, you know, was right up his alley. And because Austin was such a weird place, the public access, it was like the YouTube of its day. It was like totally uniquely strange. Like it was all kind of like you can go into a YouTube K-hole or whatever. And like, that's what it was to just like get high or be drunk at 2 a.m. and have these live shows. It was just like, they were like, you know, religious nuts, and there were, you know, like game shows and all these sort of call in like confessional things. And Alex was sort of just like right in the center of that amazing culture. And I think he was both like half entertainment and half, you know,
half real.
Yeah, half real.
Which is very much what's at stake in the trial that you were covering. So you went to Austin.
Yes.
How many days ago did you go down there?
I went down there 2 weeks ago, and I just got back this weekend. So it was a 10-day jury trial.
So you've spent 10 of the last 14 days in Alex Jones's custody trial.
Yes, and not just there. Like it was a small room. I got as close as I could every day. I was like 2 feet away from him, like, you know, listening to him sigh, like locking eyes with him all the time. There's this mundane little bit where, you know, they're trying to get their water pitchers filled up in the courtroom, and there's like this long pause and everyone's waiting. And the judge says, "Don't worry, Alex, it's filtered water." And, you know, he sells all these, you know, water filters and believes fluoride in the water kills, you know, children and things. And Alex just like fist pumped and was like really excited about it and giddy like a kid. And just in the room, like in that millisecond, even if you hate him, you're rooting for him.
This is actually like a kind of a mundane trial in a way. It's like a custody trial. It's something that happens all over America every day. What made this trial unique and what was at stake?
So the Alex's defense of the custody of his children, his lawyers put together a defense that initially was predicated on the fact that Alex's most outrageous parts of his professional life are political satire and performance art. What drew journalists like myself and others there was this chance to see, you know, where Alex Jones, the character, stopped and where the person began. And like, there was this amazing, like, the stakes were you either admit that you are, you know, a performance artist and you've been sort of selling your audience this false bill of goods for 20 years, or you risk losing your children. And the whole time, you know, you're under oath and there's, you know, the specter of perjury. And so, you know, it became this sort of, you know, weird opportunity that you would never, ever get. Like, the whole question for Alex for the last 2 decades is, does he believe everything he says? And this offered, like, the allure of, like, under oath, goddammit, we're going to figure it out. If you think about fake news, Alex has been living deep inside that world since 20 years before we had a term for it.
I was going to say, like, you know, there's a kind of a debate in the weed world about the new interlopers who are kind of opportunistic entrepreneurs and the people mm-hmm. who paved the way. Alex Jones is firmly in the paved the way camp. He's the guy who let all of these other guys build these giant audiences now, but he was out doing it when he, like, you know, he's like talking to the president now. He was doing it when he couldn't even get on like a AM band radio.
Yeah. I mean, his first gig on a radio station, not public access, he got through his dad, like, talking to somebody. And his dad was his first on-air sponsor. Like, he is bootstrapped in this way. Like, and what's crazy about it is, and I think why I'm so interested in it, is that, like, until 2012, Alex was, like, you know, virtually unknown. Like, you knew him as maybe in the back of your
head.
Maybe
a Daily Show clip.
Yeah, like a like fringe thing. Really, like, as all these other ideas started to, like, fester, the things that sort of from 2012 onward that led to, like, Gamergate and to, you know, eventually Donald Trump in the White House, all those things also made him so relevant and beloved because he had this huge backstory. Like, he had the receipts on that, you know?
Yeah. He's clearly this kind of person who sits inside a lot of Venn diagram circles. Mm-hmm. And then there's this one more circle that I thought there's just no way this trial is going to not somehow eventually have weed in it. It's just like it seems like it's lighting up all the perfect places. Lo and behold, how many days into the trial are we?
I think we're talking like it really came up on Thursday, which happened to also be 420.
Basically, his wife's attorneys are trying to bring up absurd things that he's done on air to paint him as an unfit parent.
Right.
What happens then?
So they're kind of going through this laundry list of, you know, Alex has appeared on camera sort of allegedly drunk, seeming drunk. It's a difficult thing to prove.
Sure.
So that sort of came up. And then, you know, as the vices started, as they ticked off the different vices, weed was like the very prominent one, because this past February, Alex went on Joe Rogan's podcast, which is recorded on video and live streamed, and I think like
to millions of people.
Millions of people watched it. Yeah, and it was like a 3.5 hour like marathon, and Rogan gets a lot of people who come on the podcast to smoke weed, and Alex indulged.
Well, Rogan is also like in some of these Venn diagrams.
Yes,
but Rogan historically had been like kind of hot and cold on Alex Jones. It seemed like he would like say that they used to be friends, but then if you look back, Alex Jones is like yelling about how like Rogan always claims he wants him to have him on the show, but he never actually has him on the show. So there's already like a buildup to Alex Jones being on the show. We're gonna listen to bit here. Okay. Yeah. Alex Jones appears to be smoking a joint on the show.
Yes.
Is this tobacco?
Yes, it's strong tobacco from Mexico.
I guess I am in California. This is for medical reasons?
100% medical reasons and legal. Well, that doesn't actually
hit. Inhale just now.
What's the reaction in the courtroom when this gets brought up?
So it's odd because it's sort of this tiptoey line. Like immediately his lawyers object and say, you know, like in California where this was taped, you know, it is legal. I mean, it's a really funny thing, or not funny, but it's really fascinating to see this brought up in the courtroom in Texas here as like the ultimate indictment of a bad dad.
Right.
Like it was like, sir, do you smoke marijuana?
It really hit me because I consistently in starting the show have to answer the question like, oh, do you think it's going to be like bad for me to have like talked about smoking weed on air? And I'm like, no, it's fine. This won't come back to you in any sort of a negative way. This is one way it could if you're Alex Jones.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it seems like the reaction wasn't entirely negative. I mean, he kind of spun it like into something to his advantage.
The way that this worked was it was brought up, you know, sort of in an opening argument way, but it really played out on when Alex was on the witness stand. So they bring it up and ask him about it. And his justification for it is that he smokes weed irregularly, but almost annually in order to test its strength. He says that that's what law enforcement does, which, again, I don't know enough to knock that down, but I'm pretty much guessing that there's not like all the police don't go out into the back with the evidence and just like get lit every year or like put it on the calendar to like do that. Anyhow, he says he tests it because George Soros, the billionaire political donor and like, you know, perfect example of the globalist, that George Soros has engineered the weed to be too strong in order to control the minds of, you know, all the Hillary voters out in the world. That was his line. And people were sort of, you know, I think ambivalent in the audience about this sort of like, oh, it's, you know, like bringing this up. Like, if you smoke weed, are you really a bad dad? Like, people kind of felt weird. And then he brings up the Soros thing and then it just becomes ridiculous.
The first implication is this is someone who has only been accused of smoking weed once on the air, immediately surrendering that he smokes weed at least once a year.
Yes, but he's like on record on his radio show saying he's done this. So I think he was like trying to cover his tracks in case like the lawyers threw out like, and on December 15th, 2012, you know.
Well, this is also someone who's on for multiple hours a day, multiple days a week for decades. So he probably has said like thousands and thousands of things about marijuana.
Yeah, he's on 4 hours a day, 5 to 6 days a week for 20 years.
So, I mean, that's like just just pause and think about that as a human endeavor, first of all. But then you also imagine trying to remember all of the things you've ever said about weed in 20 years when you're talking like a mile a minute. So he says, I've been doing it just like every 10 months or so. Like,
yeah, he even said like the last time I did it was probably 2014.
Then he brings up, this is something law enforcement does. And this is like kind of where it shifts from being a personal excuse to a story that people can invest in as a narrative almost.
Right. No, I mean, this is very classic Alex. And that's why I love this response, because he is always framing himself in every way as the martyr. InfoWars is his company, but it really is less of a war and more of like a Christ-like thing. You know, he always says, I don't want this life. You know, right. Like I don't want to be worried about the black helicopters like hovering over my house and the shit in the water. Like, what I would like to do is be outside and hiking and playing with my family. But I'm doing this for you. And that's sort of like, I'm smoking this weed for you.
Well, yeah, it plays on this classic trope. I guess it relates to the, like, when like a father, like in the 1970s, finds his son smoking a cigarette. He says, we're going to make you smoke a whole carton of cigarettes so you learn your lesson. Like, it almost feels like Alex Jones is just like there with this like sour look on his face, like huffing it down just because he has to, just so him and the cops are like square with each other.
Sure. Yeah. Always.
And then it does this other thing, which is why this is, I think people have the illusion that conspiracy theory is like making up any dumb set of facts. Mm-hmm. And it's like, this guy didn't become number one by like just throwing together like mashups of existing ones. You got to really get the people's imagination going. So now we have this like annual holiday in precincts across the country where the police are smoking and testing the strength of marijuana.
Because they know the truth, which is that there's this billionaire in a shadowy back room,
right,
who is trying to gain control over the entire American populace.
So what's interesting to me about this is it fits a classic conspiracy theory format, which is that it is true. Weed is really strong now. So if you're kind of sitting there in the jury box taking this in for the first time, you go, well, I have heard that weed is really, really strong now. And George Soros is a real person.
Yeah. How do you not know that that's the case, right?
Okay. So then George Soros comes in and he's just like, he's a classic Bond villain. If there was someone who would have the means to start a global weed conspiracy to dumb down voters, it would be him.
Yeah. But that's the thing. You know George Soros by name and you know one thing about him.
Right.
But you know nothing else. Like, he's right. Perfect in that regard, because you can't be like, but, you know, but George Soros is invested in this. You know,
yes.
Like, you don't know the particulars. You just know that base narrative. So yeah, he's a perfect cipher for that.
With this particular conspiracy, which is the George Soros Superbud conspiracy.
Yeah.
Where does this, like, has he ever referenced this before? Is he actually freestyling these conspiracies on the spot?
You know, I believe that this is somewhat, like everything, it's like a remix to a greatest hit, you know, or like he's like a jam band or something, you
right.
know, like he's the performance is going to be different every time you go to that
right.
Fish show.
But he's been riffing on They're Coming for Your Body really hard.
Oh,
like, that's
yeah.
one of his like central raps.
Absolutely.
Now.
And I think mind control is a huge thing. The sort of the most famous one of late is that they put chemicals in the water that are meant to turn you gay, or turn people gay so that they don't reproduce as much. Like, that's the idea, to sort of sterilize the human race. And his proof of this is not so much that there are more gay people, but that people are noticing that frogs are becoming gay. So there's a great monologue that he does where he's just like talking about Vietnam and all this stuff, and then it just kind of spirals into this. He starts screaming about chemicals in the water turning the frogs gay.
And I'm not saying people didn't naturally have homosexual feelings. I'm not even getting into it, quite frankly. I mean, give me a break. You think I'm like, oh, shocked by it, so I'm up here bashing it because I don't like gay people? I don't like them putting chemicals in the water that turn the friggin' frogs gay. Do you understand that? Serious crap. I'm sick of being social engineered. It's not funny.
He's been fighting a culture war. Like, the info war, quote unquote, is a culture war. And so much of it has to do with like fear.
So as someone who just became part of the Alex Jones world, you're sitting behind him for five days a week. He knows who you are. He ostensibly knows your name. Like he knows that guy over there. That's Charlie from BuzzFeed. I mean, did you have any trepidation with sort of in real life bleeding across that line and becoming a character in this tragic comedy?
There was trepidation a little bit with how to properly report on and intervene in something as personal as like a family custody trial. You know, you have three kids all under the age of 15 involved in this, and that is, there's that tragic element. So I think like I was very careful to report on the things that I thought were relevant to the sort of the greater narrative of who this man is, and a little less about just like, you know, digging up every kind of reckless piece of dirt.
Well, the marijuana comment really is like I think the reason why it like was sort of the breakout viral hit of this trial was like it kind of speaks to a lot of that stuff where, you know, I do have a problem with Alex Jones, but do I also have the feeling that like someone who smoked marijuana, particularly in a state where it's legal, that should be like reflect on their character in a custody dispute? I'm not sure how I totally believe that.
It's so funny because the judge did not want to make this trial about InfoWars and said at the very sort of outset, I'm excluding anything political, essentially.
Yeah.
And that's very – it's very irregular to have someone's professional life off limits in a custody trial. Like it's part of who you are.
But let me ask a question there, because when he's in the courtroom and he says, because George Soros made the weed too strong, like – didn't InfoWars just like come like smashing through the wall like the Kool-Aid guy? It's like, isn't that not being able to help yourself a little bit if you're saying this is a satire, but it's a satire I can't turn off when I'm on the stand?
The trial wasn't about InfoWars and wasn't really about that sort of like, how much of this does he believe? But in his testimony and in watching him for 10 days react, like he really showed when there were no cameras on and, you know, there is very little difference in demeanor and in volatility between the man behind that microphone on the desk and the guy, you know, who's just on trial for, his kids. Shortly after the weed thing, there was a very sort of brutal line of questioning about his sex life. And it kind of set him off. And he, with all that was at stake, you know, his children at risk, he just like lashed out and basically went into like a booming monologue about like he said, like, how dare you? I've never seen anything like this. Like, have you no decency? And he, you know, like choked back tears. It was wild. And like people I talked to after were like, been in courtrooms for 20 years, never seen anything like it. You know, up on that witness stand, like it's a little elevated. It is kind of a stage. There's a microphone. It's familiar territory for him. And yet he has to, you know, I'd never seen it before, but, you know, someone on a witness stand, you can't just speak your mind when you're asked a question. You have to, you know, if it's a yes or no, you have to do that or they'll object to it. And normally in the real world, you'd be able to say like, well, actually, I see where you're going, but actually this happened. Yep. If you do that, you're a non-responsive witness. You will, you know, you're objected to, the judge will admonish you. So he was just stuck in this position of like, he had everything to say and was legally bound from saying it. He suffered a defeat in this. You know, he still has joint custody, but he lost the ability to choose where the children live. I think that moment was just like was crucial because here are all these people who are basically unable to see the volatile InfoWars character, sort of know in the back of their minds potentially, you know, that this guy is, you know, famous for this stuff and he's controversial. And then you see that and it's sort of like, oh, huh.
I have a few more questions for you. I haven't asked you whether, if you're uncomfortable with them in any way, feel free to just pass on them.
Sure.
Do you smoke weed yourself?
Not a lot. It's not like a control thing or it's like, it really fucks with my sense of direction. Which is really weird. Like, I just feel...
Like a geographical
direction?
Yeah, like I thought you meant like a direction.
No, no. I mean, what's really weird is
there's an app for that.
Yeah, I know, right? It should be. But like, there's this weird thing where I'm always just very like right now I know where we're facing in this building. And I kind of have a general idea, I think, like where North is. This sounds really insane. I know this sounds really insane.
No, I'm fascinated.
But I just kind of like the whatever fog that settles in.
Yeah.
I just like, I feel very like unsure of like where I am in a room essentially, or like it's like waving a magnet over the compass kind of. And I just feel, I like it in certain circumstances. I'm not very functional with it.
A lot of people feel like if you have any trepidation about like weed at all, you know, you shouldn't do it or something like that. Like, what are the circumstances that do make it okay?
I mean, not being around like a ton of people. I smoked with my old roommate a couple of years ago, and we watched MLB TV's like looping highlights, baseball highlights, for like 3 hours. And there's just something about like the way that my mind is wired for baseball and the way that my mind feels when stoned that like works so well. It explains in some way that I can't quite express like why it's hard for me. Like the world is, we don't live in a baseball world.
You can't loop the world.
Yeah, yeah. And also just like baseball is just like, it's kind of the speed with which I, you know,
I'm
ready for the world.
You're living in like a the last 2 minutes of an NBA game, and like you're looking for like kind of like a like summer doubleheader that
exactly.
has like a short rain delay in
exactly.
the middle of it.
Yeah, exactly.
I can feel that. I can definitely feel that.
That's kind of where I'm at with it.
For me, the looping baseball game is 1990s Love Line episodes.
All right.
They're just like, I can just play them forever. It's like a, say what you will about Adam Carolla or Dr. Drew,
right.
both people have like gone to darker places since then. But like, if you give me like a series of calls that are all kind of like in the exact same vein, it's like someone wondering if you can get pregnant from butt sex. And, you know, it's like, it just, I can get totally lost. My mind can totally wander within that. And I think there's a little bit, I know this is like a really crazy connection, but there's a little bit of that in Alex Jones, where it's like, who sits there for 4 hours every day and listens to it? There has to be some sort of an addictive, soothing kind of experience that people are undergoing.
Oh, yeah, I think so. Especially, and it is one of those things that there's definitely this like acquired taste element to it where like it's really hard to like to dive into it. But once you sort of like know what to expect, like there's something really reliable.
Okay, do you have a moment for our quick quiz show segment? All right. So if you do smoke weed, however rarely, like what's your preferred method?
Like a
joint?
Like a PAX.
A PAX? Oh, yeah. Like a vaporizer kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm just a big fan. It's just like, I don't know. There's something about it that's like, I think you can kind of control the...
Is that like the gadget reporter in you? Like you got to like connect with the gadget?
I will say that somebody sent one to BuzzFeed and my colleague had it, and that was how I like how I was introduced to it. So yes, gadget reporting ruined my life.
I love that someone at some point was like, someone at PAX was like, let's send BuzzFeed a like vaporizer.
But not like
that might eventually like appear on some podcast.
But not like the BuzzFeed like some genius PR person who just
that's how marketing works.
Yeah. It's no, that was.
She was just waiting for this bomb.
Got owned.
Right now, someone's like, "Yes!"
I just got. I got played so hard. That was a long con too, because that was like 2 years ago.
No, but I think you're a perfect person to talk to about this because you actually do report on gadgets.
Yeah.
Like how do you think about a product like that? Like, what is it that you like about the PAX?
I mean, I really like. So I've only been once into like a store in a place, like a weed store.
Dispensary?
Yeah, a dispensary. Wow, I know what I'm talking about. A weed outlet. I've, you know, since it's not legal here, like I've never really been able to like have that sort of like, you have like a concierge and like they walk you through all this stuff and it's basically like being at Whole Foods.
Yeah.
I haven't had that experience. So I like this sort of like upping the tech ante to it. It's just like, it's a really elegant product, you know, and it makes you just like, it just makes you feel like, you know, like it's a replacement for having a glass of white wine, you know. It's just got that weird sort of like yuppie quality to it that is kind of soothing to me, for better or worse.
Do you think that if you got transferred to the like BuzzFeed San Francisco office spontaneously, do you think that that you would like be more encouraged in a legalization state? Would you treat the experience differently if it was legal?
I think it's, I mean, not because I like have some sort of like, you know, not for like reasons of morality or anything, mm-hmm. but I think for reasons
practicality,
of practicality and access. Like, I mean, I will say for somebody who like, I'm pretty like in my own head about like looking like a noob or whatever, like looking like an idiot when it comes to like, you know, acquiring weed. And like, so it's kind of like, there's a lot of barriers to like, who do you ask about what service and like, how do you, you know, like what like messaging app do I need to get on or what, like all that stuff. And so it is like, yeah, I mean, I think if it was just sort of like, what am I doing on Friday night? Oh, well, I'll just go, you know, I'll check this out. And then that would, yeah, I think totally.
And also if like your social world were to shift to more of like a, like less drinking, more weed, would that encourage you to do so?
Probably also not like in a real social setting. Like
right, you're kind of, you're avoiding the crowds.
I don't get very conversational. It doesn't.
I feel like the only thing that's going to get you into weed is like season tickets to Major League Baseball games.
Hey guys.
Just send them to BuzzFeed.
Yeah, exactly. No, I don't know. I'm always sort of the mind of like, is it a thing that if I just kind of did it a lot more? You just sort of like, it's almost like Alex Jones where it's like, it's really hard at first to like make it a part of your thing. And then once
goes down a little harsh the first 15 or 16 hours, but really by the second or third week of consistent listening, you're going to like it.
Right. Yeah. Then the little, you know, the podcast alert comes in and you're like, oh, I'm going to listen to Alex now. Yeah. No, I think.
How does someone who's like, doesn't smoke weed regularly, like how do you get like, do you keep a little bit of weed all the time for the, like, every once in a while you want it? Or, like, how do you manage something like that?
No.
It just happens?
It just kind of happens, yeah. It probably means that you spend more on it than you need to, you know?
Right. Yeah, it'd be all stale by the time you want it.
Right. I mean, it's something that isn't, because it's not a huge part of my life at the moment, it's really like I get to kind of set the conditions for it, and then it's really enjoyable in that regard. And I kind of like that, because like I think, I don't know, living in New York City as a 29 year old or whatever, like you often find yourself like, man, I should only drink you know, go out a couple nights this week or do whatever. And you always end up like, you know, disappointing yourself in some regard. But with this, it's like, you know, I do it like exactly as much as I want. There's not, it, like, I feel really in control of it. And I like that.
Favorite place that you've ever visited?
Myanmar.
Hmm. Tell me more.
There's, I mean, the whole, it's a kind of a cop out to say the whole country. Sort of went on a whim and did a 3-week trip with my girlfriend last year. And it's just like a place like that that's been cut off from the world for so long. Opening it back up, there's just like, especially the younger generation is just so like open and accepting and just like so kind and interested. And like, I mean, it's just wild to like talk to them and like watch them. Like they're having like this crazy internet boom, you know? And so like you're going there and you're like,
it's like you're rewatching the internet for the first time.
Kind of. And like we, you know, we did like this sort of really sort of like low budget hike experience thing. And there's just this like random 19-year-old kid who just took us around, you know, like for like 3 days into the woods and stuff. And just like talking to him about like experiencing all this like weird culture that, you know, that we're also, you know, jaded about and like loving.
When I'm imagining this experience, it's just like you walking by and I'm like, have you ever been on Reddit? He's like, no. He's like, you should check out Reddit, bro.
His favorite band, he was like talking about YouTube, and his favorite band was I can't remember what it was, but it was like a British pop band from like they had a one hit in like 2002, and we were with a British guy, and he was like, "Yeah, they're my favorite." And he was like, "You know that they're like 11 years old, right, or whatever," and he was like, "Oh no, I didn't know that." And then the British guy was like, "Two of them are dead," but it's just like, you know, they're just it's A, such a beautiful country, B, like just such genuine, amazing individuals. The food rules. And then there are just these spots like it's called Nepali Beach, and you basically stay at like a 5-star hotel for like $75, you know, a night with like everything you could possibly want in the on the, you know, the Bay of Bengal. And it's just like
Southeast Asia has been my favorite touristic experience also. And I feel like it's like everything that you're describing about like experiencing things are new, just like juiced for maximum entertainment. Yeah. Like all my memories of being in South Asia, like I was riding a moped and then I petted a tiger.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's so fun. It's like when you're on, I find when you're on vacation, like the best part about a vacation is like sort of having the time to be bored or just like wasting an afternoon is the best part about vacation. And when you're in a place like Southeast Asia or somewhere, you know, that's so different from and not really like has that westernization, like you can waste an afternoon without feeling weird about it. Whereas like if you're just like, you know, in Tokyo, it's like something's going to drag you away, like some, you know, like strange, you know, like ramen / you know, I don't like gadget shop is going to like draw you away from that, as opposed to sort of like it's a different pace, and it allows you to be a different person a little bit.
So you almost already answered this, but I usually say TV or movie, and so I think the Major League Baseball stream is not eligible. Favorite stoned viewing experience in recent memory, TV or movie?
Let me think. I will go weirdly and rewatch like classics of things like Casablanca, you know, or something like that, and just try to like, especially something I haven't seen in a really long time, and I don't know what it is about it or why, but I think like, I think things also that are like, just like tried and true, like this is good shit. I think I want to like, you know, see that in a different like state of mind.
On a similar note, tried and true. You're gonna be stuck on a desert island for the rest of your life, possibly weed growing on this desert island. You're allowed to bring one CD. Yes, the format of this quiz is CD.
CD. I respect that. I like that.
There's no streaming on this island.
Yeah. No, that's good.
Man. It's not necessarily asking you what's your favorite album ever.
No.
It's the true soothing. You could bring a CD that's just Major League Baseball games that you could play.
I don't. Although that just immediately made like jock jams and jock rock pop into my head, and I imagine I'd be dead in like 2 weeks, just drowning myself.
You brought a Chumbawamba CD with you.
I'm really embarrassed to say it because this is a show about weed, but like, so I went through like a big Fish phase in high school, and there's a couple I you could grab them at random, but I like bought into like buying like when they did this like the live CD sets.
You literally have this on CD.
Yeah I literally have it on CD, and I mean I guess it's maybe a cop-out because it's like a four disc.
So what Fish show are we talking about here?
I forget what year, because it's been a long time, but there's a Halloween show where they cover, you know, they always cover an album, and they cover the Talking Heads. I've tried to explain to lots of people who hate Fish, like why I like it. And my thing is just that like, it's like 20 different genres of music, you know, in one like live show, like, you know, weird, like reggae influences, salsa influences, whatever, just straight up like, you know, guitar rock. And that's why I would bring it to a desert island. Like, it's not my favorite CD necessarily, yeah, but I feel like, you know, like I could just wind out one of their jazzy sort of like standards and then just kind of like, you know, like rock out to Tweezer or something like that. And again, I kind of like, I tell people I like escaped at the right time because like, yeah, right as I really liked them, like when I really got into it, it was like right before they broke up, like that first time or whatever. And like, the quality of the music was getting really bad live. So I think it just sort of like, I got out at the right time where I still have maintained, like, I still like to like listen to it, but I don't like, I don't really go to shows and like, I don't really talk about it with people that often, except of course on podcasts, apparently.
Final question.
Yeah.
One thing that you're looking forward to doing, one place that you're looking forward to visiting, experience you're looking forward to having, like what's something you got to do before you die that you still got out in front of you? Travel being the normal answer, but I'm broadening it in this context.
Yeah.
Each one of these questions, slightly different each time I ask it due to not reading it off a piece of paper.
That's okay. I thought you were going to say like in the near future that's happening, but now that you've broadened it to my entire life.
No, we're talking like space camp kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm looking forward to the third episode of Silicon Valley on HBO coming out.
You got me. You got me. When I think about like I just want to have had like a really crazy career of reporting and doing things similar to this Alex Jones thing, like this trial.
Yeah.
Like I think the reason why sort of like I end up following a lot of, like, someone described my beat as like following the pain or like the things that are like miserable and awful. But I think a little bit of that is like I like having kind of collecting outrageous experience. And like, so the experience that I'm like most looking forward to is like being old and like having just like a big old room full of like books and like shit that I've collected from all of this. And like, you know, and being able, like, I just want to have I just want to be like the person who can tell really interesting stories at a party.
Thank you very much, Charlie.
Thank you for having me.
And that was Stoner. Thank you very much to Charlie for coming in. I'm on the tail end of a 14-day trip at Alex Jones's trial. Thanks to Anne Garrett for editing this episode. Thank you to Mickey Duje, who does all of our visual branding. We're here every Tuesday. If you want to call us and ask a question for a mailbag, you can do so at 347-464-1625. I've been getting some great calls. I really appreciate it when you tell your friends, and also send me an email, hi@stoner.co, hi@stoner.co, if you have any questions or would like to hear someone on the show. I'll be back next week.